First Church of Christ Scientist, Temple City, last Tuesday evening. The lecturer, Keith A. Clemmer of London, England, is a member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts. Mr. Clemmer's lecture is entitled, Christian Science, the Discovery of the Healing Christ.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Ruthie Sverger. And ladies and gentlemen, may I say how delighted I am to be here with you all this evening. There will be four radio audiences listening to this lecture next Sunday. Now, you who are listening on radio, I know I'm speaking for all the members of the Christian Science Church here in Temple City when I say that we want you to feel well included in all the warmth and the love that has been put into the preparation of this lecture by the Christian scientists here in Temple City. Now, I must say, it's always a tremendous pleasure to speak about Christian science, for the very simple reason that Christian science has something so practical to offer everybody, and that is its power to heal. Now, come to think of it, isn't this a most wonderful attribute for a religion to possess? The power to heal. And by heal, Christian science certainly does not mean just patch up mentally or morally or physically. Not at all. For by healing, Christian science is referring to the bringing to life of man's wonderful original wholeness and holiness as a child of God. Now, of course, it is this healing power that makes Christian science such a happy religion. For who isn't happy to be healed of his wretched, burdensome human problems? And speaking of problems, one of the basic teachings of Christian science is that God, divine truth and love, does not help in cases of sin, but then desert in cases of serious sickness or threatening disease. Why, of course not. Such a desertion is unthinkable in relation to the nature of God as ever present, ever available, divine truth and love. So let's all agree at the outset of our hour together this evening that the God of Christian science must surely be the all-healing God, always associated with the Bible, curing both sin and disease, and doing it always, as in biblical times, by spiritual means alone. Now, actually and truly, there is no problem, either of sin, sorrow, shock, fear of disease, or dread of death, that is beyond the reach or beyond the help of ever-present divine truth and love. Now, I am always glad myself that it was made plain so very early in the Bible that it is the natural province of God, divine love, to heal. And so here we have it recorded, as early as the second book of the Bible, God's most wonderful promise to his faithful servant, Moses, I will take sickness away from the midst of thee. Now, from Moses' time onwards, as many of you here already realize, many spiritually minded men in the Bible proved absolutely irrefutably this marvelous power of divine truth and love to heal not only sin, but also sickness and disease by spiritual means alone. Therefore, Christ Jesus, though unquestionably the greatest healer of all time, did not actually heal by special gift that was personal and private and exclusive to himself. Oh no. Rather, were his outstanding works of healing due to his fuller understanding of the spiritual laws that always result in healing or the exposure of wholeness whenever these laws are patiently and persistently and perseveringly applied. Three P's, dear friends, absolutely indispensable if you would have the benefit of the healing power of Christian science in the solution of your problems. Patience, persistence, and perseverance. And so, dear friends, exactly what is Christian science? Well, nothing less mysterious, truth to tell. Because Christian science is simply the discovery, but I must say, a most momentous discovery it really is, of these spiritual laws, by which our beloved Lord and Master was able to heal the sick and raise the dead with such marvelous certainty and precision. Now, so spiritual a discovery as this could only have been made, obviously, by a person of outstanding spirituality of perception. Now, such Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, most certainly was. Don't you remember Jesus himself once saying, "No man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father," as much as to say, why, nobody can possibly come into an understanding of the spiritual laws by which I heal the sick and raise the dead, unless this understanding were given unto him through spirituality bestowed on him by my heavenly Father, from whence it inevitably follows that had Mary Baker Eddy not been close to the Father in absolute purity of heart, why, she never ever could possibly have discovered the exact spiritual law by which the Son of the Father had healed the sick and raised the dead all those centuries before. But even so, in spite of the fact that many people, including, I'm sure, many of my listeners right now, have assumed that there was a spiritual law underlying all the great healing works in the Bible, in spite of that, the actual name that Miss Betty gave for her great discovery of the spiritual law, Christian Science, has taken the whole world absolutely by surprise. But I submit to you tonight that Christian Science is science for a very simple reason, that it is based on ever available, never changing, always provable, fixed, divine, eternal, spiritual truth. Better still, I would say, science, because it is based on the universal spiritual perfection of God and man, including the whole universe. And so, dear friends, in every single case that accepts our compassionate to heal, and you'll very soon discover that Christian Science is indeed a deeply compassionate religion. Why, in every case, then, that accepts our compassionate to heal, Christian Science is also automatically setting out to prove the fixed principle of its basic proposition of universal spiritual perfection by quenching every phase of belief in imperfection. Now, from this standpoint, the really great gift of this religion to all those needing its help, and who is there listening to me tonight who does not rarely need spiritual help for the sound solution of all his problems? Why not one of you? So the really great benefit then of this religion to all those needing its help is that all its teaching concerning universal spiritual perfection and their practical application to the stubborn, persistent human belief in imperfection. By all these teachings are now set up for every one of us to understand, enjoy, and practice in a standard textbook entitled Science and Health, the Key to the Scriptures, and written by the only person possibly competent to write such a spiritually minded book, she who discovered Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. Now, the plain fact is, dear friends, it is absolutely impossible for anyone, man, woman, or child with humility of mind, to look very far into this wonderfully helpful textbook without very soon beginning to discern that Christian Science is actually based on the awfulness of divine spirit. But, dear friends, this acknowledgement of the awfulness of divine spirit carries with it another very necessary acknowledgement that none of us find half so easy, namely, the acknowledgement of the merely temporal, unnecessary, and unreal nature of matter. Now, dear friends, it is this science of the absolutely provable awfulness of divine spirit, not so-called physical science, that is linked with that all-important word, health, in the title of the state book, Science and Health. Well, certainly, I shall never forget the first practical link of this wonderful, provable, spiritual science with my own physical health. But I was first becoming interested in this religion myself many years ago. Now, one night, I had a horrible, sudden, and vicious attack of food poisoning, which very speedily reduced me to a state of delirium. As a matter of fact, the only thing of which I had much awareness this difficult night was most painful sickness and a horrible underline that, and fear. That's what is going to happen to me during the rest of that month. Now, about 1 o'clock in the morning, a Christian fast practitioner was called on the telephone by my friends along the passage, who knew of my growing interest in Christian science and who were becoming deeply disturbed as to what was happening to me. Incidentally, just what is a Christian science practitioner? Again, nothing less mysterious. For a Christian science practitioner is simply an individual who has a clear understanding of the true nature of God and a clear understanding of the true nature of man, has rarely been the much-loved, well-cared-for spiritual image and likeness of God, and who is able to hold to this understanding patiently, persistently, and perseveringly to the successful dispelling of the sadly mistaken human beliefs and fears in relation to sin, sickness, and death. My dear friends here tonight, from what I now know of Christian science, and judging by what happened so harmoniously and so feebly in my own life, this particular night that I'm now telling you about, I can now see very clearly that when that practitioner was awakened at 1 o'clock in the morning, she must have awakened clean into an absolutely clear recognition of the actuality and the ever-present working reality of the harmony and the perfection of all true being. And consequently and inevitably, she must also have awakened to an absolutely clear recognition of the merely temporal, unnecessary, and unreal nature of all my fears and ills, for that horrible underlying dread, the high fever, the painful sickness, and the delirium. All four of those wretched, oppressive physical symptoms were suddenly wiped. That's completely from my experience, as if they had merely been horrid pictures imposed on a mental blackboard. Well now, by the law of the cause and effect, the obliteration of those frantic fears through the loving, compassionate ministration of Christian science had the instantaneous effect of liberating every single function and every single organ of my physical body to resume its normal, harmonious activities. But the really lovely thing to me was that the obliteration of those frantic fears and desperate pictures was so effortless and so absolutely natural that I myself was quite unaware of this benevolent mental purification or spiritual baptism going on my behalf that night. Consequently, within 10 minutes of that practitioner being called from the telephone, why, I had relaxed into the deepened natural sleep that was as fever-free now as the sleep of a peaceful child. Well, just picture to yourself, it wasn't until 6 hours of this lovely heavenly rest that I woke to find, to my enormous relief, no further night or darkness there for me to have to go on struggling feverishly through. For there is my room now, filled with the most lovely morning sunshine, and myself absolutely and radiantly well, feeling the after effects, not a fever, poison, or delirium, not one bit of it. Feeling, on the contrary, the exhilarating after effects of the divine truths of God and the divine truths of man as really being the beloved spiritual image and likeness of God, entertained on my account that night by that pure-hearted Christian science practitioner, my first healing in Christian science. Now, I must say, in these early days of my own study of Christian science, I was tremendously helped by Miss Zeddy's answer to a very important question she asked on page 2 of Science and Health. Now, may I read it to you? This is what it is. Are we benefited by praying? Now, just listen to this wonderfully reassuring answer. Yes, says Mrs. Eddy, a desire which goes forth hungering after righteousness is blessed of our Father, and it does not return unto us void. Now, how can I tell any of my listeners what it meant to me at the time when my life, young as I was already hedged about with dark and unsolvable problems, to find that wonderfully encouraging answer to that all-important question? And dear friends, no mistake, please. Prayer is unquestionably the most intelligent and the most practical mental activity of which any one of you will ever be capable. Now, never desert it, day or night. And why? Why, for the very simple intelligent reason that prayer is your principal means of communion with God, who on any reckoning is surely the source of all the help, the happiness, the harmony, the contentment and security which each one of you naturally hopes for in the orderly working out of his human life. But as my eyes dropped a little lower down on this page, I came across a very striking statement about prayer by Mrs. Eddy. Now this is how it reads. Prayer, she says, cannot change the science of being, but it tends to bring us into harmony with it. And when I read that passage for the first time as a young university student in Australia, it began at once to clean revolutionize all my previous concepts of prayer. You see, people often plead and pray unconsciously to change God in their favor, or to induce God to change sad, afflictive circumstances in their favor, just as I always used to do. But now from this passage, here I was learning that it is not God who needs to change for the removal of sad, afflictive circumstances, or even those sad, afflictive circumstances themselves. It is we who need to change for the solution of all human problems. And dear listeners, here is Christian Science to show each one of us now, compassionately and very patiently, exactly how to change for the solution of our difficult human problems, namely by bringing our daily and our nightly thinking, yes indeed, every attitude of our thought toward God and man and the human problem into accord with the original divine six spiritual truths of being, as God in his love established them in scientific spiritual truth before ever the wretched beliefs of worldliness or mesmerism arose to hoodwink the human race. Now here, for instance, is a passage from Science and Health that will always help people to change away from their somewhat personal sense of God himself. And unless I make a very great mistake right now, a very necessary first change this usually is for the solution of all human problems, namely a change away from a purely personal sense of God and of life. Now you'll notice that this passage opens with a very arresting question. Who would stand before a blackboard and pray the principle of mathematics to solve the problem? The rule is already established, and it is our task to work out the solution. Shall we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his own work? His work is done, and we have only to avail ourselves of God's rule in order to receive his blessing, which enables us to work out our own salvation. Now I wonder, did some of you listening to me notice that in that passage there's a most wonderful new name for God, which I, for one, had certainly never heard of before I began reading Science and Health. Divine Principle. Now, come to think of it, isn't this a really most wonderfully suitable name for God? He actually being the fundamental underlying governing cause or spiritual source or divine principle of everything that's already good and true in your hopes and your ideas. As you know, as I went on reading Science and Health, why, I found six other exhilarating names for God, frequently used throughout. That, of course, now makes seven names for God. Now, here they are. And let's never lose a sense of wonder and gratitude for these great names for God. Mind, Spirit, Soul, Principle, Life, Truth, and love. But let's see quickly now, while our thoughts are on these seven names for God, what absolutely distinct ideas emanate from each of these names for God to bless the universe of man. when I hear obviously it's something of enormous importance, not only to you, but also your children and your grandchildren. For here is mine, for instance, imparting unlimited intelligence and absolute clarity of consciousness to each of its ideas. Now, as spirit, why God imparts substance that is absolutely diseaseless and incorruptible. As soul, by God imparts loveliness and immortality to each one of his distinct identities. And what about principle? Why, as principle, God imparts the grip, there's a word never to be forgotten in relation to God. As principle, God imparts the grip of perfect government and unerring control. Now, as life, God imparts air of fresh activity and vitality to each one of us. As truth, thoughtless expression. Just think of that. And finally, best of all, of course, is love. By God imparts the security of his own deep divine love for each one of us, which fails not, nor ever can be withdrawn from any one of us, no matter how disgraceful may seem to be the evidences of either sin or disease in our lives. But, of course, the really encouraging thing about all these seven names for God is that they all do indeed show God to be the infinite divine principle or spiritual thought of all right ideas, named love, to be lived and loved and thoroughly enjoyed by each one of us through obedience to spiritual law. That, dear friends, is our God. Not a man-like person that has to be pleaded with through blind faith and desperate, frantic personal desire. Now, your prayers, for instance, your basic longings to be really well and happy and contented and safe. Why, now, these prayers and righteous hours of yours are never wasted, no matter how ill-worded, or even if you never put them into words at all. But each one of my listeners here tonight, why can we not now go further than this undefined kind of prayer and understand something at least of this wonderful, practical, provable, spiritual science which underlay the great healing prayer of Jesus of Nazareth, and which, when understood by any one of us, make our prayers just that much more loving, just that much more pure, just that much more spiritually accurate, and therefore naturally, just that much more assured of quick and satisfying response. Well, let's all be honest. The plain honest fact is that until an individual does understand something of this practical, provable, spiritual science utilized by Christ Jesus, why, he certainly regards himself as a mere mortal, subject to all the wretched, precious worries and anxieties of material existence. But you know, as soon as an individual begins to gain even the tiniest little glimpse of Christian science, why, you will see that in the original spiritual meaning of that marvelous first chapter of Genesis in the Bible, why, man is not actually a mortal in a single respect, for there he is fully described in the divine record as made in the very image and likeness of God. Think of the privilege of it, endowed by God with dominion over all the earth. Well, none of you listening to me now can too quickly perceive that the healing practice of Christian science does not work laboriously up towards this perfect man of God's creating, not a bit of it. It actually begins with him. And why? For the very simple reason that this man happens to represent the actual divine co-working spiritual reality of man as God created him. Now, if present perfection were not the real state of man as God created him, why, how could that spiritually minded David ever have said with honesty to those friends of his, "Mark the perfect man, and behold the upright." Now, let me illustrate this point for you. I knew a man who once suffered from a horrible sense of weakness and insecurity. These wretched areas of belief suddenly manifested themselves in his own life in such a way that he had a strange feeling from time to time that at any moment his physical knees would give way underneath him and let him fall. He also developed a very unpleasant, sickening feeling in the pit of his stomach as if he were permanently afraid of failure in everything that he did. Well, there he was, very healthy and very robust, but actually packed full of secret fear. But the strange thing was that he never knew of what it was of which he was so afraid. Well, this, of course, made him pray very earnestly in Christian fun. And one day, dear members of this audience, he suddenly saw through spiritual diagnosis, the only effective diagnosis that it ever will be, or ever can be, he suddenly saw through spiritual diagnosis that that wretched weakness of his was not actually physical at all. On the contrary, he suddenly saw that it was due to a wretched false belief that he had been unconsciously absorbing into his thoughts for many months past. Now, would any of you believe it? A false belief to the effect that his understanding of God all good wasn't strong enough to keep his thinking firmly and steadily on the divine truth of himself as the Son of God at that very important point when the pressures of sensuality, evil, and materialism began to push themselves against his thinking. In other words, don't you see, this man had accepted a very unfortunate belief that his understanding of God or good would let him down or let him fall if ever the pressure of evil or temptation against it was strong enough. But there, he said to himself, now is the suppositional cause, the suppositional mental cause of those evil needs. And how absolutely right he was. For what a wonderful sign of God's ever-present love. But just at the time when this man felt most depressed and most discouraged, a vital little idea from the Bible, God's great medicine chest. Yes, dear friends, that's exactly what it is. Just when this man felt most depressed, a vital little idea from the Bible, God's great medicine chest, began to push its way up within his thoughts, saying to him encouragingly, strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees, which he took to mean applying it to himself. Why, what I've obviously got to do now for the solution of this severe problem of mine is to tighten my mental grasp or spiritual hold on the supremacy of good, for all good is really of God. And what I also need to do in relation to those evil needs is obviously to give firm, strong, underlying spiritual support through prayer to every activity of my daily life. And so I ask you here, who is being asked to change for the solution of this severe problem? Was God being asked to change? No. Was God having to be pleaded with to change those sad, oppressive physical symptoms? No. Dear friends, a human being was being invited to change his thinking about this problem by the compassionate arms of Christ. And my goodness me, what a change. For once the man had seen the spiritual meaning of that beautiful piece I just quoted to you from the Bible, why every morning when he got out of bed, he began by lifting his heart with a great sense of gratitude to God, that as God's image and likeness, he was actually already endowed by God with dominion over all the earth. Having got this thought clear and tidy in his consciousness, out he went through the front door of his house. And as he did so, why, he dedicated every day to proving that no matter what might be the pressures of evil, sensuality, materialism, or worldliness, that my kind push themselves against his thinking during that coming day, why, not one of them actually had the power to undermine the purity, the spirituality, the innocency, the moral courage bestowed by God on all his children. With what result? Why, dear friends, the rapid and total disappearance from his physical body of both those wretched physical symptoms that had been making him feel so downhearted and so discouraged so long. But, dear friends, just exactly what had he done? Why, don't you see? In spite of all the evidences of weakness and self-condemnation and evil, by faith and understanding, he had leapt clean over the top of them and marked the perfect man and beheld the upright as constituting the actual divine, true, working, spiritual reality right then and there of his own identity as the beloved Son of God. And dear friends, it was that divine truth of himself held to patiently, persistently, and perseveringly that so quickly and so totally routed those two aggressive physical symptoms. Well, I must say, when I think of his lovely physical healing, such it certainly was, achieved by spiritual means alone like this, you know what it reminds me of? Why, that wonderful passage of the man in the Bible who once said, "Lo, this only have I found, that God made man upright, but therefore there are many inventions." Now, dear listeners, the Christian Science Church is now making it absolutely plain to universal humanity that a great battle is afoot today. Not a single member of this audience being able to avoid it. No, indeed. A great battle is afoot today for the concept of man. He held in present and future human consciousness. But I ask each one of you, is it to be God's man that gives each of you your definition of man? That wonderful man, so vividly described in the first chapter of Genesis. The man whom Jesus, nearly 2,000 years ago, already proved to be endowed with the kingdom of perfect health, perfect harmony, happiness, immortality, by individual spiritual endowment from his divine and heavenly maker. The man whom this remarkable book, Science and Health, is now unveiling, has constituted the actual true identity of every single man, every single woman, and every single child, the whole world. Oh, now I ask you, is it to be this man that gives you your definition of man, or are you going to be so foolish as to let it be one or any of the many make-believe inventions of man, concocted by human ignorance, are now being foisted on bewildered humanity more aggressively than ever through radio, television, newspapers, and human conversation? And what are some of these make-believe inventions of man? Why, what's the first and the worst? The miserably sinning man that scholastic theology has pushed against human thought for hundreds of years. Number two, the frightened, disease-eligible man, so industriously promulgated these days by mythical theories. And last and most fashionable of all, the supposedly uncontrollable, undisciplinable, subconscious and unconscious man, today being diligently propagandized by modern psychiatry and psychology. Just imagine, a different man for every different human system. How can any of them be fixed or divine or true? And so I ask, will the investigation, let alone imitation of any of these make-believe inventions of man, ever give you or the members of your dear family the benefit of that wonderful, original, divine, spiritual truth of man? The answer is a most thunderous no. And it is because of this great negative that the Christian Science Church is now pouring out with such love and such seriousness to humanity today. Not only choose ye this day which God ye shall serve, spirit or matter, but also pray ye fervently this day which man ye shall contemplate or hold in consciousness as constituting the actual reality of man. Now may I illustrate this to you. Some years ago, a young man from the City of London school came to tell me that all his professors and teachers alike were always complaining and grumbling at him because he was always having to sit in the front benches of every class and peer at the blackboard in order to be able to see it. I asked him a pointed question. Tell me, I said, what kind of man have you been studying lately? And his answer is absolutely obvious, that this young man has been studying the man who has done more to weaken and perplex human vision than any other man in all history. The Adam man, the man of biology, the man of physiology, the man of psychology. I said to him, now look, if your professor were to come into class one day and were to describe to you and your fellow classmates a five-legged horse that he dreamt about, why, I said, you could actually listen to him with the utmost courtesy. As a matter of fact, I said, you could even write an essay on the subject of his dreams. But I added, in order to keep that five-legged horse directly classified as a make-believe invention of a horse, I said, you'd need to remind yourself pretty vigorously that search as you would throughout all the lovely, lush meadows of this world, why, you'd never come across such a strange creature, because in point of fact, horses have only four legs. Well, he smiled ready assent to that quaint idea. And so then I said to him, now look, dear boy, so far as God, a man in his spiritual image and likeness are concerned. So far as God and that original man are concerned, I said, they're two-legged. Adam wrote, and just as much a make-believe invention of a man as that five-legged horse is a make-believe invention of a horse. Now, I said, when your professor comes into class and with the best of intentions begins to describe that man to you, I said, just remember, the five-legged foot. Then I said you will gradually succeed in keeping that man classified as a make-believe invention of a man. Further, and I said, you'll immediately begin to get three fine benefits. First of all, he won't interest you. Second, and much better still, he won't fascinate you. And third, and much the most profitable of all, he won't stimulate your idol or your unhealthy curiosity and desire. On the contrary, I said, you will find you gradually get increasing dominion over the mistaken belief in him. So all my listeners will be glad to hear, I know, this man was diligent and conscientious. What did he proceed to do? Oh, something so simple. He set to work to refocus his vision. And my, what a lovely phrase that is for all of you to remember. He set to work to refocus his vision, by which I simply mean that through faith and clear understanding, he now began to look on something different as far more worthwhile. In other words, by faith and understanding, he now began to look on the original man of God's creation. From that standpoint, now holding all the make-believe, biological, physiological, psychological inventions of man in thought as unworthy, unreal, and untrue. But what was that? By the opening of that young man's eyes. Now just think what this meant to him. The absolute normalization and healthy clarification of his son. An unmistakable proof, surely, that the divine truth of man is the spiritual image and likeness of God, held to patiently, persistently, and perseveringly under any circumstances you like, involving any make-believe inventions of man that you like, will invariably, inevitably, and irresistibly prove itself to be absolutely superior. And so, dear friends, I trust that you're getting a little idea this evening. The Christian science is a precision religion. My goodness me, that is exactly what it is. And it has a slightly better title. Christian science, the precision religion with a scientific method. And why? Why, dear friends? Because Christian science is not a religion which plays in between two different concepts of man, because each of them is equally real and true. Now, the divine truth, and such it most certainly is, it shows this lovely, clear distinction between these two different concepts of man. The one, divine and eternal. The other, merely mythological and temporal. By the divine truth, it shows the wonderful distinction between these two different concepts of man is known in Christian science as the Christ truth. And infinitely precious it most certainly is. Why call the Christ truth? Well, obviously after Jesus Christ. And it is just because Jesus Christ was such an expert exponent of the distinction between these two different concepts of man, known in the Bible as the new man and the old man, that he was the most competent and the most successful healer that the world has ever known. Now never, never be afraid, any of you, to trust the solution of your problems, of health and home and career and happiness and security, to these scientific distinctions of the divinely distinguished Christ truth. Let me indeed tell you of a man who, under very tough circumstances, was absolutely faithful to this distinguishing power of the Christ truth. Well, one day, this man was set upon by thieves. Well, I'm sorry to say, they were not satisfied with robbing him. But they left him battered and unconscious in a back street as well. Somebody called me on the telephone about this man. They said, do you know Mr. So-and-so? I thought for a while, and then the picture of a man coming into my thought, I said, yes, I believe I do. But when I arrived there, my first reaction was, well, you certainly made a mistake about this man. You've never seen him before. Actually, I have never seen a human head so terribly misshapen, nor have I seen a human countenance so sorely afflicted and battered as this. And yet, when I stooped low to greet the man, He hadn't recovered consciousness by this time. I heard him say, in quite a clear, firm voice, I know that I have never been outside the presence of divine love. Well, I can only tell all my listeners honestly here tonight that as I stood beside that man under those very distressing circumstances, I was filled with a tremendous sense of awe and holiness to hear a statement so Christ-like in its penetration, so Christ-like in its fidelity to spiritual truth as to pre-prove all that Bishop sent testament, but not even worth the question why. As that which, as far as he was concerned, had never actually had the capacity for occurrence in spiritual truth. And what was the result of this amazing fidelity to the fact of spiritual being under these circumstances? Why, it requires no explanation. That man's human thinking that afternoon was so absolutely free from any trace of self-pity, resentment, or belief in desertion by God that it was absolutely impossible for any one of those make-believe inventions of man that's physical and violent to foist itself onto his purely spiritual idea of man to bruise, confuse, or disfigure it, which is the all-important point. I know, he said, with his lovely perception of spiritual truth, that I've never been outside the presence of divine love. Now, one thing was absolutely clear to me from the word go. As a very privileged observer of this remarkable case of physical healing achieved by spiritual means alone. And you know what it was? The fact is this. It was absolutely clear to me that all those horrible physical symptoms of cruelty, greed, and violence, purely mental things, it was absolutely clear to me that all those horrible physical symptoms of those purely mental things were going to find it far more comfortable for their own sake to leap into self-extinction and get themselves clean off that body than dare to try and remain caved onto a body held under such a lively awareness of God's ever-present love and the harmlessness of the man of divine love's creation. Exactly what happened 7 or 8 days later. I met the man, fully dressed, ready for work, his head in perfect shape, not a single vestige of those horrible discolorations, cuts, and abrasions left upon his countenance. And yet that man had been so badly injured that it was 3 days before I myself suddenly saw, coming through his peering features, the likeness of that man that I'd originally thought of. He was the man all along. 3 days before I recognized him, 4 days later, he was absolutely free from every vestige, sign, or symptom of that physical discord. On hearing of this wonderful healing, somebody once said to me, well, how was it that that ever happened to that man anyway? I said it was just because he never asked that question of himself, that he was so completely and totally healed. Have you ever tried to press the roots of a weed into a plate glass window? They cannot get a foothold. That dear man maintained such a sense of spiritual innocency that the only thing those physical symptoms could do was clear themselves clean off his body. And that's exactly what they did. Now, dear friends, this very lovely physical healing underlines a point that is absolutely indispensable for the successful healing of any problem of any kind through Christian science. And you know what that point is? Why, it's this. It is that each of us need to recognize that all disease, all difficulty, all discord, yes, even all disaster, like that cruelty, and that greed, and that violence, are basically mental in their first impression, and actually, dear friends, entirely mental throughout their entirely, apparently, physical manifestation, and therefore naturally. The facts of divine truth and divine love held to in the mentality or mind patiently, persistently, and perseveringly are there inevitable, irresistible, invariable, and entirely adequate divine healer. And I must say, when I think of the merciful availability of these lovely laws of Christ's healing to help all of you, indeed all of my listeners here tonight, and to help each one of you to help others, why, do you know, as Paul recalls to my mind with a great sense of gratitude, Jesus' very touching parable of a woman. Yes, his parable of a woman who one day lit a candle and by its light swept out her house so thoroughly that she was finally able to find there a precious piece of silver that she had lost. Well, now, symbolically speaking, I'm sure you'll all agree with me that the most precious piece of silver that was ever lost from human use was Christian healing. Now, just think of it. For some 1,600 years, that priceless piece of silver was absolutely lost from human use. She, a woman who has found it again, was Mary Baker Eddy. And my goodness me, when is this world going to wake up and acknowledge its deep indebtedness to this spiritually minded woman for her wonderful discovery? And just what was her candle? Why, her candle was unquestionably the inextinguishable love for God and mankind in all generations to come. Now, by the bright burning of that single brave candle, Mrs. Eddy's awakened spiritual senses were finally able to discern the original spiritual meaning of the Bible, particularly the original meaning of that marvelous first chapter of Genesis, thus equipping her perfectly to sweep from this infinitely precious volume all the materialistic, all the scholastic, all the doctrinal, all the personal misinterpretations of the ages. And there lay the lost piece of silver in God's holy Bible all the time. And now that she has found it again, absolutely nothing lost of its original value, better still, nothing lost of its universal currency, the pure, divine love, by which divine love will always heal sins, no matter how secret, how discouraging, or how stubborn, and will also always heal all disease, no matter how threatening, or frightening, or painful, whenever its help is sought with a whole, utterly unreserved heart. And so, dear friends, here it is, just as we have said. Christian science, first and foremost, the religion that heals. A happy religion, just because it is such a successful healing religion. And so, all my listeners, if any of you seem in some way to have feeble needs, if you find it hard sometimes in some areas of your lives to stand upright and firm in the exercise of strict honesty, absolute purity, patience, gentleness, forgiveness, why do you open your heart generously tonight to this absolutely true, provable, divine, biblical, spiritual truth. I will urge you with new courage and new strength, truly, God. But much better still, I think, it will gird you with new inspiration and that lovely, important quality, new joy. Truly, God, especially if you accept the basic teachings that here you are already God's perfect spiritual ideas endowed by him with dominion over all and you who, if you please, are peering at the blackboards of this marvelous light with half-closed eyes. Why do not let this science of Christianity clear your vision with precision? Ah, wretched, limiting, frightening, false beliefs about yourselves, and turn you back now like a young man in absolutely new, joyful focus on your original selfhood in Christ, with which neither you nor anybody else can ever possibly be ashamed or discontented or dissatisfied. And toughest case of all, what of him who has been cruelly and harshly treated by feeding animal instincts and false beliefs in the back street there of his own darkened mind? Now rousing himself, let him deny these fleshly make-believe inventions of man as utterly unreal, unworthy, and totally untrue. And so let him recover his original standpoint of sonship in God, pure divine spirit, unsoiled, truly, and unspoiled, firm in his conviction. I know that I too have never really been outside the presence of divine love, because in actual spiritual truth there isn't any other presence or any other opposing power. And so, dear friends, to sum up our lecture, here is a lovely statement by Mary Baker Eddy herself. All that really exists, she says in Science and Health, is a divine mind and its idea. And in this mind, the entire being is found harmonious and eternal. The straight and narrow way is to see and acknowledge this fact, yield to this power, and follow the leadings of truth. Now, dear listeners to me, here this evening and on Sunday, why, whatever these individual divine leadings may be to each one of you, and wherever they may take you, now or in the future, do hear the voice of that steadfast Christ saying behind you always, just as it did for the faithful Daniel, O man, greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto thee, be strong, yea, be strong. Thank you all very much.